broadcasting from the People's Bank of Alabama studio. From a transmitter as powerful as a hairdryer. Hey, we got it on high. This is Live 95, Cullman's Independent Radio. WRJMLP, Cullman. Live 95 is Cullman's Independent Radio. And now, it's time for Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you.
That's phone number.
A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Cullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Cullman attorney Melvin Haystick. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And no lawyer on this show actually helped write that disclaimer.
Welcome back to another edition of Understanding the Law with Cullman attorney Melvin Hastings. And how are you doing, Melvin?
Here's your host for Understanding the Law.
You're ahead of yourself.
Daryl Manderson.
I did great.
Look, we always like to be ahead of ourselves.
You never know what you got to hear around here, do you?
I'm going to take credit for that disclaimer. That sounded pretty impressive.
Copied off every other radio show in America.
Well, I'm going to say that I did that for y'all because that sounded good. That's impressive.
Very good.
Well, you know, I didn't know how long the intro was going to be, and I jumped in there.
I didn't tell you I did one either. I just thought I'd see how you reacted to it.
Well, alrighty then. Next time I know.
Live on Facebook mistakes.
Danielle's over here talking without a microphone, by the way. That's okay. Melvin.
She don't need a microphone.
No, no, we can hear perfectly over here.
Thank you.
Our What's Happening in Cullman ad lady. So, hey, look, even though I'm on Melvin's show, we're still going to advertise What's Happening in Cullman.
80-degree weather is what happened today. It was nice. It was summertime.
Oh, my goodness. Come on. What's up with that?
First time to wear shorts and a T-shirt this year. Hey, I'm happy.
He said, what, it was 84? Is that what it was?
Yeah, 84 when I left Scottsboro a while ago. Man, it felt wonderful. And I think all next week is mid to high 70s. So I think it's finally into spring. The cold weather hopefully is gone. And it's time to break out shorts, make some reservations at some condos at the beach. And I will be going soon. There's no doubt.
They're expensive. I know that's something my wife brought to me is trying to look in July and condos. And
I'll hook you up, brother.
You can hook me up.
I'll hook you up. Don't worry about it.
I won't worry. I'll tell her don't worry. Big D's got us taken care of.
I got you taken care of. I'll get you a nice penthouse in Panama City. So tonight we're going to talk about wills, living wills, different matters of that subject. And if you do have a question, you can give us a call at 256-737-9505. And Melvin will be glad to answer any and all questions that you have. So, Melvin, why don't we just go ahead and talk about a will, a living will that everyone should have right now.
Okay, now, there's a difference in a last will and testament, what people call, and then there's a living will. A living will is something, that, since it's term living, is only effective while you're alive. And that is also referred to as a do not resuscitate order or do not resuscitate. I think they probably got a couple people's got other common names for them, but it's just that's something that you would say an advance directive is what I'm trying to get. That's the word I'm looking for, advance directive. And that's something that someone fills out that says, in the event that this happens, I get in this type of situation, I want this or I don't want this. For instance, it says, in the event that I'm comatose, and this physician determines that I'm going to be comatose from now on, there's no way I can recover from it, then I don't want to be put on a ventilator, I don't want to be put on a feeding tube, I don't want pain medicines or whatever else. So it says, in the event my heart stops beating or stop breathing, then I don't want to be resuscitated. Don't want CPR, don't want to be put on a ventilator, and things like that. So that's what a living will is. I mean, does everybody have to have one? Yes, it's probably pretty nice to have one. But definitely, they really require them when you get into nursing homes and stuff like that, because that way, the decision's pretty well already been made by that person about what they want. It makes it easier on relatives and stuff too, because sometimes it is, you know, it's difficult. I don't know if we talked about it. I was a paramedic for about 10 years in the 90s, and you get in some situations where maybe you've got an elderly person and you got one kid, one child that says, do something I want you to try to do stuff for, and the other one says, look, you know, they're being really sick, let's don't do this. And then it gets difficult on people, and have to make a decision about taking them off the ventilator. So if you've already, if the person, if like myself, has already got, have a living will, I will say, this is my wish. If my heart stops beating, I don't want CPR, I don't want to be put on a ventilator, whatever else. And it's easier for the family to be able to say, all right, you know, he did a living will, he knew what he was doing when he did it, and that's what he wants, and that's what we're going to abide by.
And last year, my dad was having a very serious surgery. So we had got with my friend Blake West, attorney here in Coleman, and actually done this living will. And I guess exactly what you're saying, a part of that being made me power of attorney over him, and we basically discussed everything that you just said.
Yes, you know, and the person, the person that's had this living will made, that it affects, the person that it affects is the one that has to make it, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. So
they have to be competent. They have to understand what they're doing and stuff like that. So you have something set out for that. And also within that living will, you can do it. You can put a healthcare proxy, some people call it, or a power of attorney or whatever else you can delegate your authority to, hey, if I have this surgery or whatever else, and I understand that it may be a week or 2 weeks or a month before I recover from it, and I won't be able to make decisions during that time, I want this person to make the healthcare decisions that I need to be and stuff. So you delegate your authority to make decisions to someone else.
And I believe, you know, even when I was going through all that, that Blake actually told me that I would have to give the medical staff or the surgeons, doctors, some paperwork that I actually had before they would even tell me, give me any kind of information of how the surgery went, if he was possibly going to pass. So, I mean, it's very important that people has this, especially, you know, the elderly that may have a lot of medical problems. It's just something that you have to have. Because everybody needs to know exactly what's going to go on.
Yeah.
Just in case this happens and or this happens.
Yes.
So, I mean, I learned a lot. And just to let the listeners know, it's not a long process to sit with you. I mean, there were several questions I was asked. And, you know, within a matter of 15, 20 minutes, that will was done and paid for and everything was taken care of, and it was that quick.
Yeah, the living will, yes. You can take we have a template pretty well what everybody uses, and you just go down through there and you check it. Hey, I do want resuscitation. I don't want resuscitation. I want a ventilator. I don't want a ventilator. I want a feeding tube. I don't want a feeding tube. And it takes, if you're conscious, you're going to be permanently unconscious. If your heart stops beating, if you stop breathing, you know, it gives you like four or five different scenarios, and you go through there and check it. Like I said, it probably makes it easier on the family, you know, because every once in a while, I mean, I've been in situations, like I said, where one kid says, no, save, I want you to do everything you can for them. Mother says, no, she wouldn't want that, or my father wouldn't want that. You know, he's always said he don't want to be put on a ventilator. You get a little bit of controversy, and then you got to make decisions. You know, I think the hardest thing is when someone is brain dead from whatever situation it may be, and there's absolutely no way they will ever, you're satisfied there's no way they're ever going to be able to recover, although there are times when people do recover. We know there are miracles, but anyway, when they get to that situation where it looks like, you know, that they're never going to survive unless they're on a ventilator, if they've already made that decision predetermined, I think it's easier on the family to say, look, you know, they did a living will, that's what they want.
Exactly.
And let's just let them go.
Because if you don't have it, and you have that controversy between you and your brothers and sisters,
it's amazing.
You're going to have it from now on.
Yes.
And it'll never stop.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that's the way things go. And, you know, the less controversy, the better. You know, while they're competent to make their own decisions, let them make it. Don't force it on anybody. let them have exactly what they want.
Yes. And most, I bet most serious, probably heart surgeries, most serious surgeries where they can have some complications, they probably, the physicians probably, I mean, they can't make them do it. They probably really encourage them to do it. But like I said, I know in the nursing homes and stuff like that, they really try to push to have that, right, so that they know.
So not only your living will, but we're talking about the other wills. I mean, all this can be taken care of at one time, because that's what we've done with Blake. Everything was covered, his living will, and then the will if he passes away.
Yes.
All that was taken care of, and it was just, I mean, it wasn't very time consuming. And what a relief it was, you know, for my sister and I, just in case something did happen and he did pass and I was the executor of the will.
Yes.
Everything would go out smoothly.
Yes. Yes. You know, they, that's the difference in doing the last will and testament. You know, you can direct, hey, when I pass away, this is what I want to do with my stuff. And it keeps, pretty well, most of the time, keeps most of the fighting down. But every once in a while, people feel like they get cheated out.
Exactly.
Of it, you know, but, you know, that's what they wish, that's what they wanted, and that's what you're supposed to abide by.
So, what? And maybe we'll go in a different direction now, because you know me, I'm all over the place.
That's all right.
So we're going to say I'm the executor of the will. I'm doing exactly what my dad wanted. And then the sibling says, nope, I don't. It's not going to be that way. Mm-hmm. Can that sibling probate, even though the parent already says this is the way it's going to happen? Can that be probated?
Yes, sir. You got to remember, a will is just a piece of paper that says, when I pass away, this is the way I want my property to be distributed. It really does. It doesn't become effective until you file it for probate. So once somebody passes away, you got to file it for probate, and then that makes it really an official will. That makes it a, where the probate court accepts it, and then you get your power of being executor, and you can actually do what needs to be done. So once that's done and it's accepted, and the judge accepts that will in there, and that judge appoints the executor, then that person's in control. Subject to, you know, you can go in there and try to, there can be some issues come up with the, you know, have a judge make a decision. But once that will is probated and accepted and the executor is appointed, then you go on until you're removed.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's, because it gets real complicated. So you got to remember, when we go back to our first lesson, when we was talking about how courts work, if you do a will, it's a piece of paper you put in your safe deposit box or put somewhere safe where whoever's your executor knows where it is. Okay. That thing stays there until you pass away. Or you change it. If you go change it, tear it up, do away with it, get your new and put it back in there. Once that person passes away, then any heir can take that will and file it for probate. Most time, it's going to be whoever the executor is. So they're going to take that thing to a, you don't have to have a lawyer, but you have to file a petition. You can't walk in with a will and say, hey, look, probate judge, here's a will. I want you to do what this thing says. You have to file a petition saying this is a will. Most of the time, it's going to require you to have a lawyer. You don't have to. There's probably things online you can print off sheet, the petition to probate a will. So you'd file all that stuff in. Any heirs would get notice, and then you'll have a court date set. Well, so here's the important thing. Who is an heir? Well, it's a spouse, and it's children. If there is no spouse and if there's no children, then you're going to start looking at parents if they're still alive, and then you're going to have to look at other siblings of the person that died. So that's kind of what gets the case started. Most of the time, if somebody comes in, I file a petition probate will, I say, look, who's the spouse? Who's the kids? And then I try to I ask them, do you think everybody's going to agree that this is a will? That they agree that you're the executor, and if they say yeah, all of them do, then we'll draw up some kind of waiver that people will sign and says yes, we agree that Daryl should be an executor. We agree that this is my dad's will, and we want everything to, you know, to go like it is. If they sign a waiver, there's no court date. It's just, you just go through the process and get it done. If you have one or more of them that says no, I'm not going to sign a waiver, then there's going to be a court date set. You get notice of that court date, and then the judge is going to hear what you file, what you say. Look, this is, you know, if you have a lawyer, they're going to ask you about you, who you are, how you related. This is his will. Is there anyone else that would, any other wills that you know of? They're going to ask you who all the heirs are. And then if somebody wants to try to contest you, they can go in there and start asking you questions and try to get you taken off or not be the executor. But I would say probably 99% of the time, whoever's appointed executor in the will is going to be the executor.
Okay.
They're going to take care of the case.
So if somebody is going to go against everything that's there, are they going to then at that time set another court date for everyone to get back together? For these other people contesting to say their piece, or is it all going to take place on that very first court date?
Well, it is very important. If someone, and we're going to talk about will contest in a second, but if someone's going to contest the will, they have to file a contest before that will is accepted. Once you go to court and that judge hears the case and says, all right, I accept this will, you're the executor, it's hard, you can't do nothing with that will then. You're stuck with it. So if you're going to file a contest, you got to file it before. Now then, you can't contest it saying, I don't like it. I ain't getting my fair share. This ain't right. This is not right. This is not what he told me. The only thing you can contest is the will was not done right. You can say either the person wasn't competent. They just didn't understand what they was doing. They had dementia. You know, that's the common thing. Okay. This person had dementia. They didn't know what they was doing. Or you can say they was under undue influence or duress. Somebody took them up there and tricked them, and really kind of forced them to do this will and name this person executor and name these people as heirs. That's the only thing you can really contest on it, because most of the time they're done right. Now you have the person making the will that signs the will in front of two witnesses and a notary. The two witnesses sign saying, yes, this person did the will, and then the notary notarizes it saying, yes, everybody was here, these are the people, and that's the will. So most of the time, the procedures are done right.
Okay.
So what's left to contest, you know, for instance, let's say I got a will that's got one witness on there. The law plainly states you have to have two witnesses.
Right.
Okay, I can contest that will saying it's not good. It don't comply with the law. But if it's got two witnesses, and everything, and it complies with the law, there's nothing you can do about it other than saying this person didn't know what they're doing when they signed the will. They're forced into signing it, or they just, like most of the time what I hear is dementia. They had dementia. They really didn't mean this. You know, the brother or the sister or the stepmom or somebody come in and took them up there and took advantage of them when they didn't know what they're doing and got a will done.
But if I'm the judge, how are they going to prove that to me? Because if they can't, then it's just going to stay the way it is.
Medical records about the only way you can do it. I mean, I've done a few of them, and it's medical records. So if I was represent someone that was contesting the will, we would call witnesses like a physician, take a deposition of a physician. It gets expensive, you know, and present testimony that, hey, this person had went and seen Dr. Smith on the week before, and this doctor diagnosed him with Alzheimer's and dementia.
Okay.
And decreased mental capacity. And I would say, look, this person didn't know what they was doing. But in response, you know, just because someone has dementia doesn't mean that they have a moment that they understand. If that person, even no matter what their diagnosis is, unless of course they're unconscious, but if they're a conscious person, if you present testimony that, hey, that person and evidence that that person knew what they were doing the day they signed that will, then the will is still effective. I've had a case. We tried it in circuit court like that where they were trying to say the guy was diagnosed with dementia, but he wasn't. We had, I don't know, four or five witnesses, I think we called, that said that day he understood. He was plain about what he wanted. So that was a will contest, but they didn't win it.
So let's just go to the far left and say, okay, he was right. He didn't understand what he was doing. He was forced to do it. Now, how is the will going to be redistributed?
It ain't. See, at that point, if there is a contest and the judge determines, hey, this person didn't lack the capacity to make that will, it's called testamentary capacity. They didn't understand what they was doing. They didn't understand the property that they were distributing. They didn't understand who their heirs were. They didn't understand what they was given. They wasn't under, you know, this person was under some duress and really, it's really not what they wanted to do. If all of that applies, then the judge says that's not an effective will, so they throw the will out. So it's like the will never happened.
All right. So if you want to give Melvin a call, 256-737-9505, Understanding the Law. We'll be back in just a moment.
Musical Ambassadors of the Army, the United States Army Field Band and Soldiers Chorus from Washington, D.C. will be presenting a free concert in Hanceville on Saturday, March 25th, 7 p.m. at the Betty Leith Haynes Theater at Wallace State Community College. For more information about this performance, visit armyfieldband.com. That's armyfieldband.com.
If you are unable to attend this event, Live 95.5 is proud to bring the concert to you live. Tune in at 7 p.m. this Saturday to hear the live broadcast of the U.S. Army Field Band from Wallace State College, right here on Live 95, Cullman's Independent Radio. Live 95, Cullman's Independent Radio, is proud to present yet another local community program for Cullman. Join us immediately following Sports Talk Live on Thursdays for a brand new show that will help our listeners focus on lifestyle health, including working towards a goal of reaching your optimal weight and creating an optimal health environment for the rest of your life. Join host Sandy Seibert each and every Thursday evening at 6 p.m. for Path Changers, Habits of Health, immediately following Sports Talk Live, right here on the station that is all about Cullman, by Cullman, for Cullman. Live 95.5 FM, Cullman's Independent Radio. It's coming, and it will blow your mind. Tune in Thursday night at 6:20 p.m. during the Big D Radio Show for a huge Live 95 announcement.
It's really going to be a big debate, but I'm always ready.
It's not just big, it's huge!
Tune in Thursday night at 6:20 during the Big D Radio Show for a huge Live 95 announcement. You are not gonna believe this.
This is Big D, the new voice of Live 95.5, bringing you creative design. They integrate cutting-edge graphic design into a high-volume printing operation, combining state-of-the-art technology with the artistic human element. Creative Design offers vehicle wraps, signs, banners, jerseys, and printed shirts of all kinds, hats, and so much more. They are the premier printers for Cosmic Sound, Live 95.5 on the Big D Radio Show. Let Tina Walters at Creative Design help you with your purchase and design. You can find them on Facebook, Creative Design, 256-734-7242. That's 256-734-7242.
Welcome back. Live 95 is Cullman's Independent Radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Cullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Cullman attorney Melvin Hastings.
Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
Well, I hate to say it, but Tommy said my last name wrong. It's Nethery, but hey, look. Everybody puts the L in there since I was a little kid.
It's actually not Tommy, but it's all good.
Was it not? Oh, it sounded like him a little bit. Okay, back to what we were talking about with the will. So, Melvin, if the will is thrown out, what happens next?
You got to understand, wills getting thrown out is rare. That's not a common thing. Okay. It's tough. And the good thing about the probate statute that you have to tell people about, because I have people come in and wants to contest a will, and I said, you know, this is what you got to do to meet the burden to get it thrown out. And you realize this: if you fail, the statute states that you're responsible for all the cost. So the question,
wow.
Yeah, the question. so if you win, it's good. If you lose, it can be bad. Yeah. You know, I've never had to deal with one that we had to determine what the cost is. Now, like I said, I had a will that's contested while it took a circuit court. We didn't pursue the cost, so I haven't really read the law on it. I don't know what the cost could be. I mean, it could probably incur attorney fees and everything else. I don't know what the court can do, but they can probably make you pay if they wanted to. And I guess a lot of it depends is, did you really have a valid contest or not? If you have a valid contest, but you just really didn't meet the burden, I think most judges are going to be all right with you. And they may make you pay a little bit of fees and stuff like mm-hmm. that, but if it's frivolous, they're probably going to make you pay it, and it's going to be bad. So that's probably one reason why a lot of contests don't come in. But, you know, the other thing is you got to have a lot of money to contest these things. You know, there has to be a significant – you know, there's not always a ton of money in some of these estates, but now some of them gets to be pretty hefty.
Wow.
You know.
So
– so your question, I need to answer your question. Okay. What happens if it gets thrown out? The other thing you have to remember is that if you're going to file a will, it has to be done within 5 years of the date of death, or they're treated like they don't have a will. So if someone dies on March the 21st, 2017, you got till March the 21st of 2022 to file that will. If you file that will on March the 22nd, 2022, that will is no good. It's treated like you didn't have a will. And then you go through the administration process, which is a little bit different.
So tell me, why wouldn't somebody file that will immediately? And I mean, why would they wait if there's a will?
Most of the time, people would probably not file it because there was left out of that will. So here you go. Here I am, James. Let's say I'm James here, and my dad passed away, and he left me $50, but he left my brothers and sisters $500,000 apiece.
Right.
I have his will in my hand. So if I file that will, then I've just made me $50 and made them $500,000. So I have no reason to do it now. Is that legal? I don't know. I don't know that I have, just because I have a will in my possession, I don't know that I have to go take it to a lawyer or a probate judge and say, do this or do that. Now, if it becomes an issue, then I have to. For instance, let's say that brother John over here knows that he's getting $500,000 and knows I got the will. Then what he would do is go file to be administrator of the estate. And say, Judge, there's a will out there, and we want it probated. Well, then the judge would set a hearing, enter an order, and say, if there's a will out there, you have to produce it. Now, if I don't produce that will at that point, I'm probably going to get in a lot of trouble. So that would probably, that's one reason why they don't. The other reason is, a lot of times, and I've had this, happen recently, it's just I say ignorance, and I don't mean that ugly. I mean, people just don't know the law.
Right.
They don't know that you have to file a will for probate. And if
a little bit windy.
It's a little bit windy out there. The clouds look a little rough. But anyway, They don't know that they have to file it, so they just don't file it. And they think, all right, he's got a will, we're doing it like we're supposed to, and everything's fine. Well, remember, it can be, but you got to make sure that you don't get suckered, because some people knows that you got that five-year statute, and maybe they're getting left out, and they've learned that, hey, we just won't say nothing or do nothing. Once that 5 years run, then I'll go file, be administrator of the estate, and that will's no good.
Wow.
So you get that 5 year rule is very, very important.
So if the judge is going to throw something out, is he going to try to contact all of the family members?
No.
To produce a will?
So here we go. When I file a petition either to probate a will or to be appointed administrator over an estate, that's two different things. Remember, to be appointed administrator over state means there's no will out there. They're going, everybody that can be an heir is going to get notice of that. So that, like I said, spouses, children, that's the main ones. They're going to get notice to come to court. All right. There's going to be a court date set. If people show up, then it's going to get handled. If people don't show up, it's still going to get handled. You understand? So if the heirs and it doesn't show up, then they're just going to be subject to what happens. The main thing is they've got notice. You prove that they've got notice. They didn't appear, and then you go on through the process. So that's how everybody gets notified. If the will gets thrown out, then the judge is going to set it up as an administration, not as a will case. It's going to be as an administration. The biggest difference is this. Everybody that does a will, I'm talking about all attorneys that do wills now, when the executor's appointed, almost every single will exempts an inventory. It exempts a cash bond. I'm going to talk about this. A bond, not a cash bond, a bond. And it exempts a final settlement. What that means is this. If you administer an estate without a will, the judge is going to require you to go get bonded, which means you're going to go to an insurance company. They're probably going to require you to get $25,000, $50,000 worth of bond or $100,000 worth of bond. So you're going to get an insurance company that says, hey, I'll stand behind this guy or this girl. If he or she does what's supposed to, that's fine. If they don't what they're supposed to, we got insurance up to $50,000 on them. Well, you know, insurance companies going to cost you that, $250, $300, $400, right. $600, I'd say $600, $700 for that bond premium. That's got to be renewed every single year while that will is while that estate is pending. So that gets to be expensive. So a lot of most wills exempts the bond. Most wills, okay, after that, then once the case is going, then the judge within, I think it's maybe 90 days, I think is what the statute says, but usually within 90 days of her granting that administration estate, she's going to say, own an inventory. So you're going to go inventory every single thing in that estate. It could be a headache. Most wills exempt them from doing that. And then the last thing is, once the case is finally settled, the judge wants a final settlement, which means that you have to sign, hey, this is what I got, this is what I did with it. Most wills exempt that. The administration is essentially the same thing. It kind of goes hand in hand. But with the will, once you probate it, and the judge accepts it in a probate, it's over with. And if nobody don't file nothing, I mean, there's nothing. You don't go back in front of the judge. It's a done deal. It's finished at that point.
So you, as the executor, take care of everything.
Take care of everything. Go
as quick as you can and get it over with.
You take care of it and do it. If you don't, if there's an issue, somebody can file something and have the court intervene.
Okay.
You know, and I mean, it does. You file to have them, have the executor removed. Maybe the executor decided, hey, I'm the executor and I'm going to take everything. Well, that ain't what the will said. And he says, well, I don't care, I'm the executor anyway. Well, then once he starts doing stuff or he's not doing his job, you know, sometimes executors die. You know, right. Sometimes they become real sick and can't do what they're supposed to. So you can file to have them removed and replaced by someone.
And when you go file this will, do you have to pay a charge at the courthouse?
Yes, there's a fee for it. It's not that much. It's, I don't know, $20, $30, $40 for the filing. And then they run it. You also have to give notice. Another thing you have to give notice, I said, do you have to give notice to the heirs? Once the will is probated, you have to, or once you're, you administer your estate and you've been appointed administrator, you have to give debtors and creditors, notice also. So what that means is maybe my father owed a credit card, Citibank credit card money. So I have to actually send them a certified mail notice that, hey, I'm the executor on here, and if you have to claim, you got 6 months to file a claim. So that's another thing you have to do. Either as it don't matter if you're an executor or if you're an administrator, if you know that they owe money to somebody, you have to give that person notice. and they can file claims.
Okay. So every person has to be paid that he owes.
Well, you have to give them notice. Don't have to be paid. Okay. They have to give notice. Let me tell you what happens in real life. So you would send out a notice to this creditor, Citibank. Let's say there's a, and this happens all the time. I don't understand it, but $1,200 credit card out there that he owes. Okay, so you send notice to Citibank. All right, if Citibank, they have 6 months from the date that they receive that notice to file a claim. If they don't file a claim within that 6 month period, then that claim is forever barred. You by law cannot pay that claim. Okay. If they file a claim and you contest it, you say, Judge, no, I don't know that this is legitimate. I don't have proof of it. I don't know nothing about this claim. They will, 6 months later, at some point down the road, the judge will set it for a hearing. They get notice of being a hearing. And I'm going to tell you, these credit card companies and stuff, unless it's something significant, they will not show up for them hearings. If they don't show up for the hearings and provide proof, you do not pay the claim.
Okay.
I know. I mean, that sounds not nice, but I mean, that's the deal. The law state. I had a case one time where she owed, I mean, this person owed, I think, like $3,000 to a credit card company, and that credit card company sent their claim in. It was like 6 months and 4 or 5 days. I mean, it was just a few months over 6 months, but the statute is plain. It says if you don't file it within 6 months of the date, then it is forever barred, and the executor is prohibited from paying it. She wanted to pay it. I said, you can't do it. If you want to pay it out of your personal money, that's fine. You cannot pay it out of these estate proceeds. The law says you can't do it.
So, and I'm just guessing, how do you know what they owe, and who all they know? Well,
and see, the key is, that's the key, is it's only who you know. So as your executor, when you're getting bills in, then you're put on notice, okay?
Okay.
You've got to get them people notice. If you're not getting the bills in, then the way you let the public know is it runs in the paper. That's the other, part of the fee. You pay 40, 50 bucks, whatever it is, to run it in the paper. I think it's once a week for 4 weeks, I think is the way it runs. So you run it in the Coleman Times, Coleman Tribute, or whatever your local paper is. And that puts all the creditors on notice. And there's actually companies that, like these big credit cards, whatever else, they hire companies or individuals that do nothing but monitor that type of
really?
Stuff.
Really?
Yeah, they look.
I did
at
not
they,
know
yeah,
that.
Yes, they'll watch papers and they'll keep up with stuff, you know, to try to figure out who does and who does it owe and things like that. But you know, when you get down to it, they're really looking at the big money people because, you know, a majority of the stuff you file this, the people probably, you know, a lot of them still own, they own the house, they own this, they own that. And when it gets done, there's no money to pay them. So I think a lot of them know that. But you'd be surprised how many, and it's always credit card companies, how many credit card companies, they just do not show up for them hearings. And their claim is dismissed. They do not get paid.
Well, you know, because I would think it would almost be the same thing as if somebody filing bankruptcy. You know,
yes.
All they're going to do is write it off.
Yes.
So you're thinking if someone passes, they're just going to write it off, be done with it, and go on.
Yeah, that's what happens. You know, and I guess it. I mean, it costs them money to hire someone to go over and do it. So, you know, that $1,200 credit card, you may pay somebody $500, $600, $700 to go process a claim for you, and the time you get everything done, you ain't gonna get $200. So I guess they just say, "Well, I just write it off and don't." You know, and the other thing is, you gotta get notice of it. I mean, it's not, you know, probably somebody passes away, the credit card company still sending them bills for 6 months. They're not getting any responses. They don't realize somebody's passed away.
Right.
That, you know, but like I said, there's companies that monitor that stuff. They'll go back and they'll look and see obituaries. You know, I don't know what all they do. I'm sure they look at a lot of stuff and figure out, hey, this person's passed away. And then they'll notify the you know, they'll say, all right, this person's passed away, and they'll file a claim on them and stuff.
All right, so let me give you another scenario. Dad has passed away. Mom's already been passed for a long time. Dad's got a house, still owes $30,000 on the home. What happens now? Is the executor of the will saying it's going to be his son or his daughter? Are they going to have to go ahead and pay that $30,000 if he has that much money cash that he's actually has in, you know, in his possession before he passed, or is the judge just going to say, hey, look, we need to put this house up for sale?
I would imagine if you have the cash money, if you have the ability to pay it and there's a mortgage owed, it would go, it's a claim. I mean, the mortgage company's going, if you notify them, they're big and it's big money. You know, it's not that $1,200 right. credit card. It's, like you said, $30,000, $40,000, $100,000, whatever else. They're going to file a claim. Once they receive notice, you know, and most executors are going to know, is going to receive some kind of something in the mail, or they're going to know mom and daddy owed money on that house. So you're under duty, remember, to give them notice. Once you give them notice, they're going to file a claim. And they will be entitled to whatever cash proceeds are out there after some certain exemptions. Okay. We'll get them exemptions in a minute. They are very important.
That sounds good. If you want to give us a call, you can, 256-737-9505. You're listening to Melvin Hastings on Understanding the Law. We'll be back in just a moment.
From the People's Bank of Alabama studio, from a transmitter as powerful as a hairdryer. Hey, we got it on high. This is Live 95, Coleman's Independent Radio, WRJMLP Coleman.
This is Big D, the new voice of Live 95.5, bringing you creative design. They integrate cutting-edge graphic design into a high-volume printing operation, combining state-of-the-art technology with the artistic human element. Creative Design offers vehicle wraps, signs, banners, jerseys, and printed shirts of all kinds, hats, and so much more. They are the premier printers for Cosmic Sound, Live 95.5 on the Big D Radio Show. Let Tina Walters at Creative Design help you with your purchase and design. You can find them on Facebook, Creative Design, 256-734-7242. That's 256-734-7242.
Live 95, Coleman's Independent Radio, is proud to present yet another local community program for Coleman. Join us immediately following Sports Talk Live on Thursdays for a brand new show that will help our listeners focus on lifestyle health, including working towards a goal of reaching your optimal weight and creating an optimal health environment for the rest of your life. Join host Sandy Seibert each and every Thursday evening at 6 p.m. for Path Changers, Habits of Health, immediately following Sports Talk Live, right here on the station that is all about Coleman, by Coleman, for Coleman. Live 95.5 FM, Coleman's Independent Radio.
Musical Ambassadors of the Army, the United States Army Field Band and Soldiers Chorus from Washington, D.C. will be presenting a free concert in Hanceville on Saturday, March 25th, 7 p.m. at the Betty Lee Haynes Theater at Wallace State Community College. For more information about this performance, visit armyfieldband.com. That's armyfieldband.com.
If you are unable to attend this event, Live 95.5 is proud to bring the concert to you live. Tune in at 7 p.m. this Saturday to hear the live broadcast of the U.S. Army Field Band from Wallace State College, right here on Live 95, Coleman's Independent Radio. It's coming. And it will blow your mind. Tune in Thursday night at 6:20 p.m. during the Big D Radio Show for a huge Live 95 announcement.
It's really going to be a big debate, but I'm always ready.
It's not just big, it's huge!
Tune in Thursday night at 6:20 during the Big D Radio Show for a huge Live 95 announcement. You are not gonna believe this. Welcome back. Live 95 is Coleman's independent radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Coleman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Coleman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
Welcome back to Understanding the Law with Daryl Netherly.
Not Netherly. Nethery. I meant to bring your birth certificate up here. Let him see it.
I do have it, by the way.
So, Jay, is the big announcement that Donald Trump's going to be on the radio show?
It's huge.
It's huge.
Y'all are going to feel funny if I get Donald Trump on the my Big Day radio show.
If it weren't Understanding the Law, my guess would be that Alexander Shinar is going to be sponsoring the radio station.
Well, look, Alex, he has a cousin that her and I, we've been friends for such a long time. And the running joke for many years has been that I've always asked her if I could be on one of his TV commercials, you know, with me, like, you know, either a cane or a walker, you know. And Alex got me $400,000, you know. I just think that'd be cool, seeing Big D on a walker. But that, you know, paid advertisement. This is a paid actor, by the way. But, you know, Melvin, if you just had that many billboards, good Lord.
He took a chance. I mean, I've never talked to the guy, but I've heard people that say they've talked to him and know what happened. But, yeah, he took some money. I don't know if he got it off of a case or how he did, but I think he took a few hundred thousand. I don't know exactly how much, and took a chance, and it paid off for him. Puts billboards everywhere and...
My guess is he must have gone into the billboard companies and said, all right, is it not rented? All right, I want it for two pennies on the dollar.
Yes, because they're everywhere. Yeah. I mean, you go down into, because we go to Gulf Shores every summer, but you go down around Gulf Shores and Orange Beach and places like that, man, that's like every mile, even half a mile.
And they're stacked on top of each other.
Yes.
So, hey, we get the picture. Yeah. We know.
Hey, it works, you know. I still remember Carl Goldberg, 800-600-6034. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they played it 24 hours a day
over
on TV.
And
it works. Jeez.
But, you know, bottom line, I don't care what you do. You have to advertise and you have to promote yourself.
So what happens if the Alexander Shinar billboard causes me to be distracted while driving and I have an accident because I was looking at the billboard?
Then you're going to call Bill Winnington.
Yeah.
I bet that would be a tough case to prove.
It'd probably be tough. Just make sure you report it to the trooper. That's what happened. It writes a report. So I was looking at that Alex Sonora billboard, and it got me distracted.
Well, actually, I'll make sure that my friend watches my video tonight so she can get a good laugh at it. Her name is Janet Shinara Banks. So, good folks. All right, so let's get back to where we were at. And I was talking about the house, and there's a $100,000 left out on it. So I guess my first question is, can the executor of the will and or another heir, I got a hair on my mind. It's not on my head, though. But can they take the responsibility of paying off that and keeping the home?
Yes, pretty well, because most wills gives them the power to sell, to pay, to do this and do that. So when you read a will, I mean, one of the last paragraphs in there says this executor has these powers, and it's a whole list of things. So an executor, if he sits there and says, hey, I want this thing paid off, I'm going to use these proceeds to pay it off, then he can do it. But now the legislature says this: you got to pay their last medical expenses first, you got to pay their last illness medical expenses, and you have to pay their anything with their death and burial first. Once you get that, funeral expenses, once you get that paid, then you can pay the other stuff. So as long as that stuff's paid, there's money left, yes, he or she can pay the house off. You know, then you go through, the wills won't say, hey, I hereby devise, give, bequeath, whatever wording they use, my real property to these people, to that person, whatever else. Most of them, you know, I have people that comes in and says, I want the property divided. I want all three of them to have it. I want it sold, and then it be divided. I want it to go to one person or not. So you can do it however you want to. And here's another important thing when we talk. I mean, we can use two or three shows. We just talk about this with this topic because it's so vast. There's so much things in doing estate law. But here's something that I get a common question is, do I have to give my property to my spouse? Do I have to give my property to my kids? How much do I have to give or whatever else? You can give your property to anybody you want to. You can disinherit anybody you want to. You don't have to. The only thing is this, if you have a spouse that's living when you die, that person can file an elective share. And what that means is, so here I am, John Smith gives my property to all my kids and leaves out the spouse for whatever reason. That spouse can come in and say, no, she has to file it though. She's not automatically entitled to it. He or she would file saying, hey, I'm entitled to my elective spousal share, which is either, I think it's one third or the first 100,000. I can't remember the money I did. I know it's one third. So if they file for their elective share before the will's completed, then they get the one third of it. So I tell people, you can disinherit anybody you want to except for your spouse. But if you you can even disinherit them, but realize if they file a petition for their elective share, they're gonna get one third of the estate.
Okay.
So and I guess I would just be thinking that it would be more than that. I don't know. But I get so
that's what they're entitled to in the elective share. I need to really read the statute. I can't remember if it says one third or $100,000, whichever is more or whichever is less. Okay. I can't remember. So it's one of the two. I can't remember exactly how the statute says.
Okay.
But you know, I've done this 15 years. I've not had a situation where I had to file elective share. I mean, I know what's out there. We studied it, and I see it, but I've never had to do it. But I know that is a statute.
Well, and these are all good scenarios to talk about, just in case something happens. And yes. And of course, we all hope that nothing like this happens. But so why don't we just touch on just for a minute? Oh, it may take 10 minutes or an hour. But why don't we touch on that inheritance tax for a minute?
Yes. The inheritance tax, I looked it up because I couldn't remember exactly what it was. I know prior to Bush taking office back in, 2004? Actually, 2000. He took it in 2000, didn't he? Somewhere in that time, in the early 2000s, the inheritance tax used to be $750,000. Now it is moved up. I think they just got a graduated system, so each year it automatically goes up.
Okay.
Now, I just read it a minute ago, I think it's $5.45 million. So what that means is this. An estate has $5.45 million exempt property that you don't have to pay inheritance tax over. Once you go over that amount, then you have to start paying the inheritance tax. And I think that's all federal money. And it's probably a significant, I'm sure it's a 30 or 40% fee. It's pretty good. It's a pretty good bit of money. The other thing about inheritance tax, from what I remember, I don't think they changed it. They may have. There used to be something about paying, you can give someone $10,000 each year, and that without it was exempt. Anything over that, they had to pay taxes. So here you go. Grandma gives you $20,000 a year. If the inheritance tax is still $10,000, then I think it's questionable. You have to get with them and count it. That extra $10,000, you may have to pay taxes on it.
Wow.
Yeah. But you can do it $10,000 each year and it be exempt. Exempt is what you want. When you're talking about Medicaid, you're always talking about Blake. Hopefully Blake come here and talk to you about a lot of this estate stuff. But when you want exempt stuff, that means it's taken out. That's real important because that is property that's set aside that you don't, it's not subject to being taxed or taken. So So that exempt property, that the $5.45 million is exempt. So you got that much property that's free of taxes. Anything over it, you have to pay taxes. The $10,000 to each person is exempt. Anything over it, you have to pay taxes. In wills and in estates, exempt property is, there's a homestead exemption, a spousal exemption, and then a personal property exemption. And what that means is, the homestead, let's go back to the homestead. I think now it's up to $10,000. It used to be like $2,500 or $5,000. I can't remember, but now it's $10,000. What that means is a spouse or a dependent child can get $10,000 worth of property and stuff that is not set, and it's not part of the estate. They can get it without having it go through the estate process. What that means is, let's say there's $20,000 out there. Let's just throw a scenario. There's $20,000 out there. So you have a spouse that's going to claim some kind of exemption, and $10,000 of it gets out. So that $10,000 goes that person, period. The other $10,000 is subject to claims by creditors. So we go back to, hey, if you give notice to a creditor and that credit card company shows up and they got $1,500 claim, or some stuff we was talking about during the break, you got judgments or liens out there or something that shows up that somebody filed an actual claim for, that other money that's in the estate, it gets paid out. So that's why I said exempt property is something very important. That's money you can put aside that nobody has access to, that you can give away without creditors and judgments and stuff getting it, and taxes and stuff.
So if I had to pay taxes on that $10,000 extra, what's the percentage that I have to pay on that?
$10,000? I don't know, man. That's an accounting. Yeah, that's a little tough.
Okay.
That's tough. Because I assume, and here I am assuming things, I tell people not to, but I assume that's just probably just going to be income for you. So you'll, when you do your taxes in the year, you're listed down as income probably, and then you'll get it out. But now federals may have a certain amount. They may say, hey, between this amount and this amount, you pay so much percentage, and you think over that, you pay another percentage. So I don't know how they do it.
Okay. So as we're closing up the show, we're going to go to one last thing that I'm going to ask. What about back child support, liens, judgments that's against this person that has passed? What goes on there?
Yeah, that's still the same thing. If the executor or the administrator knows about it, or if they're given notice about it, they have to let the other side, the people that sold the money, the creditors, know. You have to send them a notice that, hey, there's an estate out here, and if you have a claim, you have to file it. So it's the same process as everybody else. It's not an automatic. Now, not now. Eventually it may be, but it's not an automatic thing that has to be paid. So, you know, if my father passed away, he owed a child support amount to someone else, then, and I knew about it, and I'm the executor, I'm going to have to send that other person a notice saying, look, he's passed away, we got his estate going here, it's in Coleman County Probate Court. If you have a claim, you better file it. And right. And they're on the same rules as anybody else. You got 6 months to file it.
Okay.
If they don't file it in 6 months, then they're not going to get any of the estate money.
Wow.
Yes.
There is so much to all this. It's just unbelievable. Hey,
and we have it. I mean, there you could spend a whole day talking about wills, who needs a will, who don't need a will, why do you do a will, what's put in a will. You can do the whole – we could talk a whole show on what you do and just an administration of a state, how complicated it can be and get. And, I mean, there's a lot to this. The power of attorney stuff, I mean, that's very important because, like, for instance, you just talk about that you assigned the living will and the power of attorney. You know, that gives you a lot of authority over a person. You make their decisions.
Right.
You know, and really what a power of attorney does most time is it allows you to sign their name, and it's a legal signature that people have to recognize, you know, but there's conservatorships, guardianships, and things like that that kind of goes along with that, where you actually make the person's decision. So if I'm a guardian over someone, all that's when the person's alive, of course. Once they die, then the power of attorney and guardianship stuff dies. But if you're a guardian over somebody, they have no authority to make decisions. You make their decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that's really important. It's a big role. It's people when they come in and talk about it. You know, I tell myself, we can file a petition for it and be appointed. And it's going to cost some money. There's issues, but the biggest thing I tell them is you got a lot of responsibility you're taking on when you do that.
Right.
You know, and you got to, and when you get to that point, you have to answer everything we've talked about tonight is in probate court. You file it in probate court. You file it with a probate judge, and you have to get approval. So if I'm spending money, I have to let the probate judge know how much I'm spending, what am I spending it on. At the end of the year, I have to file an accounting, what I've done with their money. Wow. And so, yes, it's a lot to it.
Well, we are wrapping up now. We appreciate everything that you've told us tonight, Melvin. We've just covered just a small snippet of other things that we can talk about. And hopefully I may talk with my good friend Blake West and try to get him in here next week while you are out on vacation and get some more information, maybe more in depth of the knowledge that he has about all this.
We need to start figuring out some Kiss songs that kind of goes with our topics. And then we can play them as an outro or something. So I'll have to start thinking of Kiss songs that kind of...
I like that.
I don't know what would be a good Kiss song to do with estate stuff, but we'll figure it out.
Sounds good. Thank you again, Melvin. Yes. Thank you, Danielle, our executive producer of Understanding the Law. Big D will catch you next Tuesday night at 6 p.m. with another attorney. Hopefully we'll get Blake West in here. And God bless you, and most importantly, God bless America. We'll see you next time.
From the People's Bank of Alabama studio, from a transmitter as powerful as a hairdryer. Hey, we got it on high. This is Live 95, Coleman's Independent Radio, WRJMLP, Coleman.